You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Morning, friend. Welcome in hour two of the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, December 5th. Hope your week's starting off well. This second week of Advent, it's coming quickly, for sure. 20 days left until we celebrate the Nativity of our Lord. Just had a great conversation with Dr. Stephen Bullivant, who is Senior Lecturer in Theology and Ethics and also an author at St. Mary's University in Great Britain, the Benedict XVI Center there. And I've had Dr. Bullivant on the program before, talking about other issues related to theology and things. But I've known that for the last several months, he's been going through his own journey with depression. And he wrote a piece about it back in August entitled, "Can Catholic Devotion Heal My Depression? Right now, it doesn't feel like it." Writing in one of the more despondent seasons in the midst of that. And then followed that back up with a piece just the other day from the Catholic Herald, "What Depression Has Taught Me, Praying for Others is a Very Practical Work of Mercy." And of course, there's no guarantees with depression that they won't become a part of his experience again. But I really appreciate his willingness to talk about it and to share about it, particularly through the lens of the faith, in a way that is not prone to some of the misunderstandings that we oftentimes tend to have about depression and discouragement. All you need to do is pick up the scriptures or pick up the writings of many of the saints to see that there is not one sort of monochrome emotive spirituality that accompanies one on the Christian life. Read the Psalms, the great prayer book of the Jews that comprises the majority of our own official prayer of the Church, the Liturgy of the Hours. It's replete with every human emotion. As I've said, it's like the TV radio host, Delilah, that she's got a song for every mood, supposedly, though I don't always get it, but my daughters do anyway, and my wife. But the Psalms are like that. The prayers of the saints are like that. Depression, and you can't always easily sort of categorize it as in some sort of mystical terms. Sometimes depression is just depression, but as Stephen has noted, there are lessons to be learned even in the midst of the darkness. Even when you don't have any motivation to do any other thing but to stay in your pajamas, eat bowls of cereal, and watch Mork and Mindy. We talked a little bit about that off air. The irony of talking about Mork and Mindy when Robin Williams had his own dealings, of course, with depression that led to his own taking of his own life. And again, somebody who you would never necessarily have expected that they struggle with depression. That was one of the issues. In fact, I put this question out there today, this question of the day: what's the most commonly misunderstood thing about depression? And you're free to chime in, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. But these are some of the responses I've gotten on social media. What's the most commonly misunderstood thing? Cheryl says that if you have enough faith to be healed, you can overcome it. And if you have depression, you must not have enough faith. Wow. That is such an insidious sort of belief. Because this idea that faith always leads to healing. Talk to the Apostle Paul about that in 2 Corinthians 12, where he talks about his own thorn in the flesh. Barbara says a misunderstanding is that depression is caused by a variety of things, which include biological, psychological, and chemical factors. The biggest misconception, I think, is that depression is not real. And I think particularly those who've never suffered from it, who have sort of a preternaturally sunny disposition, perhaps, may have a difficult time of accepting its reality. Kathy says that others feel they can, quote, fix you by keeping you busy. Sometimes alone and quiet is all I want. So if you've got your own thought on that, as I said, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. It kind of connects in some ways with something that I read over the weekend, an interesting article in at Alatea.org, the blog by Philip Kozlowski. It's a story here that says a computer geek takes one more step toward sainthood. So you have this story here of Carlo Acutis, an Italian young man who died at the age of 15 of acute leukemia, I believe. His cause for sainthood has been opened. He is a described, here we go, let's see, on Thursday, November 24th, 2016, Cardinal Angelo Scola closed the diocesan phase in the canonization process for Carlo Acutis, a 15-year-old Italian boy who died in 2006, so 10 years ago, of leukemia. He was a well-loved teenager who devoted himself, according to the story, to prayer and daily mass, as well as computer programming, film editing, website creation, editing, and the layout of comics. According to the website for his canonization process, which is at carloacutis.com, I'll see if I can post a link, it says Carlo was gifted at anything related to computers so that his friends and the adults with computer engineering degrees considered him a genius. Everyone was amazed by his ability to understand the computer secrets that are normally accessible only to those who have completed university. One of his most significant computer ventures, evidently, according to Kozlowski in this online posting here, one of his most significant computer ventures was cataloging all the Eucharistic miracles of the world. He started the project when he was 11 years old and wrote at the time, "The more Eucharist we receive, the more we will become like Jesus, so that on this earth we will have a foretaste of heaven." He then asked his parents to start taking him to all the places of the Eucharistic miracles, and 2.5 years later, the project was completed. He researched over 136 Eucharistic miracles that occurred over the centuries in different countries in the world, around the world, and have been acknowledged by the church, and he collected them into a virtual museum. He once said, this young man, Carlo Acutis, "To always be close to Jesus, that's my life plan." His mother said about him, "His immense generosity made him interested in everyone, the foreigners, the handicapped, children, beggars. To be close to Carlo was to be close to a fountain of fresh water. He understood the true value of life as a gift from God, as an effort to answer, to give to the Lord Jesus day by day in simplicity. I should stress that he was a normal boy who was joyful, serene, sincere, and helpful and loved having company. He liked having friends." As Kozlowski writes here, he says, while he may have led a devout prayer life, he went to Mass every day. He was very much interested in being a teenager in the 21st century. While his interests were very broad, he also found time to volunteer for work with children and the elderly. It's really, I think, a really neat story. And what it underscores is both, I think, why these sort of causes are important to remind us that in a day in which, quite frankly, in every age, we are so quick to condemn and dismiss the young. You know, be it, we like to pass around funny videos on millennials, we like to poke fun at the precious snowflakes, but the truth is God can make saints of any person at any age, and every generation has its strength and its blind spots. So we need to see hope that God makes saints in the most ordinary of persons. But another thing here I think we need to see is that, you know, there are so many different facets of what it looks like to be a disciple of Jesus. And the different saints with their different strengths, temperaments, backgrounds, interests, and so forth, each provide a different angle or a different reflection of what it looks like to be a disciple. Not everyone will face a martyr's gun. I mean, as a martyr will face the gun of an assassin. Not everybody will be a profound theologian. May simply be a computer nerd. But grace builds on nature, and God can make saints of anyone, and God can make saints of the depressed. Not in spite of their depression, not around their depression, but through their depression. And he's done as much to do that. I think Stephen Bullivan, who we had on, if you missed that conversation at the end of the second hour, you want to check it out on podcast, because I think he has a lot of really good things to say about the nature of what this hope is. First reading for today, first or second Monday of Advent. The desert and the parched land will exult. The steppe will rejoice and bloom. They will bloom with abundant flowers and rejoice with joyful song. The thing is the desert and the parched land can do nothing in and of themselves to rejoice and bloom. It's a gift of grace. And so for the person who is depressed, the person who's in darkness, don't throw out pious platitudes, but stand with them. Be their expectant voice of prayer and hope when they don't have the strength themselves. And let's together see, in God's time and providence, the desert and parched land exult. We'll be back with more. This is the Mike Allen Show. We'll look back in history, perhaps, when we get back, maybe talk to Lavinia Spirito. We're going to try to give her a call in the Holy Land. See if we can work that out. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, the 5th of December. Keep the family of my friend Greg, who passed away yesterday, in your prayers. My friend Greg, who had been through a 3-year battle with a very rare form, very aggressive form of prostate cancer. He, after 3 years of fighting, went to be with Jesus yesterday, and his family keeping vigil by his bedside, standing with him in prayer. When you pray for a good death, that you would remain in your faith through the midst of it all, and even through the suffering, and that you would have those standing by you. Greg, it was certainly very difficult, very debilitating, but a man whose faith and his family, whose faith and witness, even in the midst of their pain, has been a great source of grace for many. So pray that the same grace that they have blessed others with, that they will experience it on their own, and pray for eternal rest for my friend Greg and for all those who are suffering. There are those throughout the world that we don't know of who are suffering in unimaginable pain and grief and all the rest. And those who will go to face their Lord today, pray for the grace and strength for them in the midst of that. We were talking a little bit earlier in the show about depression, talking to my guest, Dr. Stephen Bullivant, and asking a question of the day. What is one of the most misunderstood things do you think about depression? And I'd love to have you comment if you want to chime in. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. Maybe you've experienced it yourself, or maybe you've learned through having a loved one experience it. Maybe your own misconceptions have oftentimes been shattered. We've been trying to effort Lavinia Spirito, Lavinia, who co-hosts the show Unpacking the Gospel. She also has her own show called Real Living on the weekends. She's one of the founders and the teaching leaders of the Catholic Way Bible Study, which has started here in Lexington, Kentucky, and has mushroomed to branches and chapters really all around the country and probably world. Lavinia is over in the Holy Land with her group on pilgrimage, and they were the last day of their pilgrimage today. They were going to spend it in Petra in Jordan, which is a pretty remarkable place. If you're not familiar with Petra, think about those sort of facades built into the side of rock that look like the front of homes or mansions, but built into sort of sandy rock in the side of a mountain that was used in the film Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. That's Petra in Jordan. So anyway, we'd love to hear from her, but we'll keep efforting her. Hopefully, through the wonders of modern technology, we'll be able to do just that. Anyway, maybe we can spend a couple of minutes, look back in history a little bit. What are some other things that happened on this day, December 5th, throughout the ages? Pretty short list today, actually. On this day in 1791, composer Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart died in Vienna at the age of 35. Man, another one of those people that when I see what they accomplished, and that they're younger than me, in this case, considerably younger than me. I want to do like that little, like Sylvester Sylvester the Cat's son in the old Looney Tunes cartoons, and just go throw a bag over my head. I'm so ashamed, Father. 1901, Walt Disney, pioneer of animated cartoon films, founder of the Disney theme parks. I guess you could say the Disney Empire was born. Following his death 50 years ago, actually in 10 days will be the 50th anniversary of his death. Disney company was just in its infancy in many ways compared to what it is now. 1933, national prohibition came to an end as Utah became the 36th state to ratify the 21st Amendment to the Constitution, repealing the 18th Amendment. You know, prohibition was a bad idea when you get Utah to ratify its repeal. 1955, the historic bus cut begins in Montgomery, Alabama by Rosa Parks, one person who had the wherewithal to stand up in a time when others just went with the flow. And then in 1973, Paul McCartney and Wings released the album Band on the Run. That's an interesting song, Band on the Run. You know, it's got like three songs in the midst of one song. Very interesting. I like the song. I can't say I was on the whole a huge Wings fan. Maybe I'm just colored by my disdain for simply having a wonderful Christmas time, which I'm forced to endure. Because not only does it come on the radio, but my wife and children love the song. And it makes me want to drive my car into a ditch. But you know what? I'm a good, faithful, loyal husband. So I don't give in to that temptation. Big news over the weekend was something that went down with Donald Trump. Donald Trump, the president-elect, of course, receiving a phone call regarding from the president of Taiwan, congratulating him on his election as president, and actually posted a response on this on Facebook, saying that, you know, I want to give credit where credit's due. Again, I think we have a tendency in our highly partisan climate politically, when we have someone that we disagree with on some things, to be shrill about everything. And I think it does several things. I think it damages our credibility in terms of being a credible critic of the administration. I think it deepens the partisan divide, and it forces those who might otherwise be equipped to hold someone to account to tend to knee-jerk defend everything they do. It really is a path to tyranny in many ways, because all of a sudden it simply becomes about the will to power, not really holding anybody accountable. And so just like the left was hysterical in their critiques of President Bush, to the point that those on the right no longer listened to them because they thought you're going to complain about everything, and therefore they always felt the need to defend everything, and therefore We saw this creep of executive power that was only hastened with the presidency of Barack Obama. Again, now those on the right became shrill, and those on the left felt the need to defend everything he did, every single executive order and all the rest. So now we've fallen into that, back into the other, you know, yo-yo or a swerve to the other ditch now that we've got President-elect Trump. So I do think it's important to give credit where credit's due. And in my opinion, this country has kowtowed way too long to concerns about offending what is called, I guess, the People's Republic of China. Now, a little history here, you know, and again, I'm no Far East expert, but, you know, with the communist revolution that occurred back in the late 1940s in China, in which the Republican government in China, which, to be fair, was marked with some corruption and so forth. I mean, these types of revolutions don't usually come out of nowhere. They tend to arise up out of situations where people are unhappy with things as they are. And so the communist revolution that took place ultimately took control of the entire mainland of China, and the sort of small people's republic of China government forced to the island of Taiwan. Now, of course, for decades, and even to this day, they continue to contend that they are the true government of China. But, you know, over time, finally, ultimately, the United Nations relented and excused Taiwan, or, you know, the ROC, the Republic of China, from their participation representing China, and they extended an invitation to the communist regime to take their seat at the United Nations. The United States shifted to a one China policy under Jimmy Carter, sort of spearheaded in many ways by Richard Nixon, to where the United States would no longer have official diplomatic relations with Taiwan, but would treat the communist government, which has been in place now almost 70 years, as the true government of China. And so, from what I understand, no president had had a direct communication from a Taiwanese president in almost 40 years until Donald Trump took this phone call from Taiwan's president, Tsai Ing-wen, last Friday. And it has created a little bit of what you might say a diplomatic row here, because there is a... a concern about whether this signals some sort of shift in U.S. foreign policy away from a one China policy. And by the way, the U.S. is not the only. I mean, there are many countries who find themselves in this dilemma. Who do they recognize and deal with? You can either be an idealist, or you can be a, you know, what we call it, real politic. You can either deal with China as it is. But this evidently has created some waves, though the communist regime in China, though they have, I think, have filed an official diplomatic complaint, they are trying to attribute this more to a misstep from Trump, according to Chinese state media, that this was sort of his own naivete. Then they think it signals some sort of huge shift in U.S.-Chinese foreign policy. We'll pick this up a little bit on this side of the other side of the break. As I said, I gave kudos to Donald Trump for this, because I think the communist regime tends to be bullies and want those to kowtow to them. Refreshing to see that not be the case. We'll pick this up on the other side of the break. If you've got a comment, 573-4BREAD-4. This is the Mike Allen Show. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Time of the hour back on the Mike Allen Show. Still been trying to effort my good friend Lavinia Spirito, co-host of my weekend show, Unpacking the Gospel, which if you haven't checked it out, listen to some of the podcasts. We deal with the gospel reading for each week's Mass. Lavinia, who I deeply respect, she's one of the founders of the Catholic Way Bible Study, deep knowledge of Scripture and passion for her faith. She also hosts her own show, co-hosts her own show called Real Living. But Lavinia is on pilgrimage in the Holy Land. We had hoped this was her last day. She's going to be at Petra in Jordan. We'd hoped to catch up with her, but, you know, technology's great, but it's not perfect, and especially when you're on the other side of the world. So pray that all's going well on their trip and they have a safe return home for sure. Again, my question of the day is related to depression. We talked to Dr. Stephen Bullivant last hour, theologian, author, professor, about his own struggle with depression and some of the lessons learned, some of the things that are helpful from friends, well-meaning, and some of the things perhaps that are not well-meaning from friends. And the question being, you know, what do you think is the biggest misconception or misunderstood thing about depression? And inviting you to weigh in either with a call or a text at 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your remark on Facebook or on Twitter. My friend Alan adding a comment that one of the misunderstood things about depression is that it's something that automatically comes from outside yourself. That's what he said, that it's necessarily caused by something outside yourself, like sad or unfortunate events. What are you so sad about is the question. And you know, there are occasions in which that's the case. I mean, people do have circumstantial depression, reasons to be sad, but there are other times in which there is no circumstance one can point to. It's just an experience of a heaviness and a sadness. You know, and there are times that I think that the person who is depressed we automatically assume some degree of mental illness, but perhaps they see things with a clarity that the rest of us, if we were stripped away from some of the distractions and anesthetizing activities that we involve ourselves in, and we faced squarely sometimes the realities of this world, we might be prone to be depressed too. So anyway, really, really good stuff. And I would love to hear your comments or you chime in on that for sure. Anyway, we were talking a little bit about Donald Trump and his reaction or his phone call that he received from the Taiwanese government, which evidently has been a diplomatic no-no avoided by U.S. officials for almost 40 years. We have this strange relationship with the communist government in China. And certainly there have been progress in terms of China opening itself up to freedoms and to the world and to, into private entrepreneurship and all kind of different things. And I think certainly we would say being engaged with China as opposed to hostile toward China has been a good thing. I do think sometimes there is a tendency, therefore, for us to turn a blind eye or to sort of give a wink and a nod to some of the significant human rights abuses that have taken place in China. And we have oftentimes, and partly this may be rooted in the fact that we owe China a lot of money, which does not help. We've had a tendency to play by China's rules, diplomatically speaking. And in all fairness, I mean, they are the type who will shut things down if they feel like there is some sort of an undermining of their status in the world. And, you know, it's amazing the sort of almost irrational hostility they have toward the small little rump government of the former Republic of China in Taiwan. And so, you know, the Donald Trump, according to this story from the Seattle Times, the headline was, Trump continues to defend his call with Taiwan's leader. The question asking, is this a policy shift or is this simply a misstep of an inexperienced government leader? According to the New York story, President-elect Trump continued to use Twitter Sunday. It is such a fascinating time. I mean, again, love him or loathe him, Donald Trump is certainly changing the game in terms of how social media is used
by a president. He continued to use Twitter to defend his engagement with the leader of Taiwan, a breach of diplomatic protocol. In a series of evening tweets, he groused about criticism that he didn't work with China ahead of the contact because China considers Taiwan a rogue province. He says, did China ask us if it was okay to carry out a number of actions such as build up disputed islands in the South China Sea or take economic measures hurtful to the United States? So, you know, here's the question. I think on the one hand, I actually put on Facebook, and I'm sure the world is watching, my kudos to President-elect Trump. I said, again, as many issues as I have with the president-elect, I have to give credit where credit's due, and it was refreshing to see a U.S. leader not simply kowtowing to what I saw as bullying behavior from the Chinese. Of course, with a willingness to do that comes an uncertainty of exactly what China will do, and you know, I'm not sure the prospect of Donald Trump on Twitter trying to deal with diplomatic crises is necessarily the best thing. It's a little bit of a talking past each other sort of thing. Which, if you've seen, maybe I've got the film Arrival fresh on my mind, which I saw this movie this weekend. I highly recommend it. I partly want you to go see it so that I can have somebody, more people to talk about it with that, because you can't really talk about the movie a great deal without giving massive spoilers. And so I don't want to do that, but it is an important, profound film. So anyway, looking, I'm on the Twitter account of Real Donald Trump right now. And, he, of course, not only did he spend the weekend calling out companies who were moving their production outside the U.S., he also called out Saturday Night Live. Just the thought of Donald Trump sitting around in his PJs, watching Alec Baldwin imitate him, and then feeling like he's got to respond. Is this going to be the case for the next 4 years? I mean, really? We've talked about how Donald Trump sort of gigs the media, you know, trolls them and gets them to respond to every ridiculous thing he says. But it seems like the troll is also trollable, because Saturday Night Live, Alec Baldwin's obviously getting to him. Anyway, it goes on to say, you know, he criticizes some companies who are taking their jobs out of the country and so forth. Rex Nord of Indiana in particular. But then he goes on to deal with this whole criticism about his conversation with Taiwan. And he says, did China ask us if it was okay to devalue their currency, making it hard for our companies to compete? Heavily tax our products going into their country, the U.S. doesn't tax them, or to build a massive military complex in the South China Sea? I don't think so. Exclamation point. Nobody uses exclamation points like the Donald, because everything is huge. But, you know, maybe I should have been a little bit more reticent about giving him my kudos for rattling China's cage, because I sure hope the heck that he knows what he's doing, you know? I mean, this is why there are diplomatic protocols, and because people see the possibilities of things. This is the trickiness of dealing with China. This is, you know, why even the Holy Father and the Vatican, for example, really wrestles with how to deal with the Chinese situation. Again, are you an idealist and draw lines in the sand? Or do you give in to sort of realpolitik, as they call it, in which you deal with the world as it is, and then you're accused, of course, of compromising or of kowtowing and all the rest. But make no mistake, it is changing the game. Whether this is some sort of huge shift in terms of how the U.S. relates to Taiwan or not, and just a misstep, it is going to be an interesting 4 years, and hopefully It won't be like the line from The Hunt for Red October that the late Fred Thompson, who played the battleship or the aircraft carrier commander. Remember that when he comes up out of the hole? I can't help but quote it. It's one of my favorite movies. And he sees that one of his planes has crashed on the aircraft carrier. And he says to Jack Ryan, Alec Baldwin's character, "This business will get out of control. And we'll be lucky to live through it." Hopefully that won't be the circumstance as things continue to unfold with the U.S. and China. And like I said, a lot of delicate stuff going on with China these days. So certainly worth keeping an eye on. If you've got a comment, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. We come back from the break. We'll talk a little bit more about this and get into some other things as well. We'll spin the Dollar Catechism wheel and more. Again, my question of the day is about depression. What do you think is the most misunderstood thing about depression? If you want to chime in, 573-4BREAD-4, call or text. We'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Fifteen minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. Want to learn more about Breadbox Media? Just go to breadboxmedia.com. Simple enough. If you haven't yet downloaded the app, maybe you're listening to live streaming through a laptop or some such, get the app. If you've got a smartphone, you can always have Breadbox Media in your pocket wherever you are. The cost of data these days, the opportunities that are out there, you should be able to listen just about any time you want. So check it out. You can also explore some of our different programs, show hosts from all around the country and every corner and across the fruited plain. You can also listen to old podcasts or subscribe through Google Play, Podbean, or iTunes. You can also become a friend of your very favorite show. Nod, nod, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And through your monthly support, you can receive access to exclusive online content and have the good feeling of knowing you're supporting something that you appreciate. We are all about walking together, journeying together to a deeper understanding of who Jesus is, what it means to encounter him, and to come to know the church that he founded upon St. Peter and the apostles that continues on through our own stumbling and bumbling, but his own fidelity over the years, and that the gates of hell will not prevail. That's the good news indeed. So check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. Again, my question of the day has to do with depression and maybe the most misunderstood things about depression. So you can go on Facebook or Twitter and comment 573-4BREAD-4 or email me mikeallenshow@gmail.com or chime in 573-4BREAD-4. As I said, please pray for my friend Greg for the rest, eternal rest for his soul and for his family. His wife Lee, his daughters, all those who love him. The thing I'll say about my friend Greg, who passed away yesterday after a 3-year battle with cancer. When we became Catholic back in 2005, my family and I, and it was a very, uncertain time for us. By God's grace, I had secured a job, which is that's in a story in and of itself. My wife and I made the decision to become Catholic, even though I was a Methodist pastor and we were pregnant. She was pregnant. I guess I can't. I can hear the mothers out there. We were pregnant. What you talk? Who's we, Kemosabe? No, she was pregnant, but pregnant with our 7th child. We didn't know what we were going to do for a living, what we were going to do for a job, anything like that. I mean, they tend to frown on remaining a Methodist pastor when you're Catholic.
And so I had announced in January to my little Methodist church that we would be leaving in June to enter into the Catholic Church, which certainly made for an awkward few months, though I have to say, despite the shock of it and the difficulty in processing it for them, and how could be otherwise, they were very gracious to us in that journey. But nevertheless, their concerns for us, I felt very keenly, and that was, what will you do to support your family? We were living in a Methodist parsonage. We were going to be moving out of that. You know, all my life had been oriented around my vocation as a Methodist pastor. What were we going to do? There was no Catholic church out there that would hire me because I wasn't Catholic yet. You know, I knew I had translatable skills, but employers out there weren't quite so convinced, and so forth. So it really was a time of crisis. But during that journey, those last several months of uncertainties, my good friend Greg, who just passed away, and several other friends who were Catholic, introduced themselves to me. We began having lunch ever so often. And he actually began to talk to me about possibly coming to work for him. He had owned a couple of hospices. He was looking for a chaplain of sorts. But this is just the kind of guy that Greg was, concerned about my well-being, concerned for me. And on the day we moved, the day before we moved out of the parsonage is when I got the opportunity. I called the bishop who I had met, the bishop of this diocese at the time, Bishop Ronald Gaynor, had called him just to ask him if he knew what some possibilities were. And he had told me there might be a position full-time opening with the Catholic Diocese as the director of family life. He said, I think you might be a good candidate, but I don't know when we're going to be ready to open that position. A lot of uncertainty, and it was sort of stringing me along. I got to June 1st, I think the next day we were going to move out of our Methodist parsonage. I still had a couple weeks left as pastor, trying to get out in time for them to be able to paint and redecorate for the new family to move in. The day before we moved out, I called Bishop Gaynor and just to inquire on, you know, when do you think that position might open up? Because I still had no employment, even though we'd signed a lease to rent a house and all this stuff. And he said, oh, well, I'm glad you called. As a matter of fact, we just had a meeting about this and we're ready to hire for that position. And we would like to offer it to you starting July 1st. And then Bishop Gaynor said, you probably want to pray about this. I said, Bishop, with all due respect, I have prayed about it. I accept. We were already packing boxes to move out of the house the next day. So the next day, some new Catholic friends show up to help us move out, our family move out, adding their own sweat equity in our future life together. My friend Greg, one of them, there to help lift boxes, to help move. It's the kind of friend he was. And, to me, you know, I think we leave an imprint on people based on our relationship with them. The imprint that Greg will leave on me is one of hospitality, one of genuine concern and friendship. And someone who, even when he was in the last months of his life, was not embittered, but in fact, somebody who challenged me to a deeper trust of my future into the Lord. In many ways, my becoming Catholic required some faith. Facing death the way Greg and his family have done, that's faith of a whole different order and makes me want to say, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. So eternal rest grant unto him, O Lord, and let perpetual light shine upon him, and may the souls of the faithful departed through the mercy of God rest in peace. Well, let's go ahead and jump into spinning the dial catechism wheel, because we sometimes push it right to the very end and we don't have adequate time. We go to random.org, our random number generator, and we see what Providence may have in store for us. Dial up a number between 1 and 2865, total number of paragraphs in the catechism. Of course, we know truth is never fragmented or random, always woven within the panoramic totality of the faith. This is in the section on the celebration of the Christian mystery, or the liturgy, second pillar of the catechism. This is under the section in the communion of saints.
We also call these spiritual goods of the communion of saints the church's treasury, which is, quote, not the sum total of the material goods which have accumulated during the course of the centuries. On the contrary, the treasury of the church is the infinite value which can never be exhausted, which Christ's merits have before God. They were offered so that the whole of mankind could be set free from sin and attain communion with the Father. In Christ, the Redeemer himself, the satisfaction and merits of his redemption exists and finds their efficacy. That's a long quote from the Doctrine of Indulgences, a document from the church. So we talk about the church's treasury. Think just for a minute, of course, about, you know, you see these memes pop up from time to time. Sell the Vatican, feed the poor. And what we oftentimes forget is that the treasures of the church, and the church does have considerable material treasures, artwork, historic edifices, sacred objects and so forth. They really aren't owned by one generation of Catholics. They're really owned by the church, by the grace of God, and they're for the world. And so if we sold some painting or the statue of Michelangelo's Pieta, it's going to end up in some sort of exclusive museum that you have to pay to enter that you can't see. So, I mean, let's set that aside for a minute. When we talk about the church's treasury, we're talking about something of a whole different level. The treasury of the church is of infinite value. It is Christ's merits before God, which are infinite. His sacrifice himself. This is why the Father loves me, because I lay down my life, Jesus says. And so there's an infinite treasury of merits. Now, believe it or not, here's the beautiful thing is our own merits. We can, through our choices and by God's grace, we can add our merits. Now, what's infinity plus one? It's infinity, right? And so we add nothing to the infinite nature of Christ's gift, but in his condescension, he graciously allows our good works, motivated by himself, so he receives all the glory, but to share in it. It's like the child who takes $10 from their parent to buy their parent a gift. He gives us the opportunity to participate. But it's from this treasury of merits that the whole concept of indulgences is drawn. Indulgences, which is a word which has gotten such negative connotation, unfortunately. I wish we could almost rebrand it. The church hasn't ceased believing in it. Indulgences simply means tenderness toward our sin, tenderness such that we can find mercy for our shortcomings and we can draw from the merits of Christ himself and for all those who saints who unite with us. That's my friend Greg, who's passed through this veil of this visible world. We entrust and pray God's tender mercies upon him. He'll only be saved, as any of us will, by the grace of God in Christ. And may he experience the healing mercies of the merits of Christ and his saints. We'll be back tomorrow by God's grace. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.